Hola, my name is Carlos Jimenez, and I represent Florida's 26th congressional district.
Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. My name is. My name is. My name is. Carlos Jimenez, Republican, United States Representative from Florida, who is currently serving his first term in Congress. Leadership in government and service is not a first for him. Being a retired firefighter, he was then elected to fire chief back in 1991.
No, I was appointed. Not elected. That's an appointed position.
Appointed, right. Not elected. Appointed. I'm sorry. Appointed to fire chief in 1991 before serving as city manager, then commissioner, and ultimately a two-term mayor of our awesome Miami-Dade County, the 305.
Two and a half terms. Yes, I was elected three times.
That's congratulations.
Thank you.
And that ran from 2011 to 2020.
That's correct.
There we go. Two and a half terms.
There. You got that right.
I got that. Getting something right.
Right. Okay.
Finally, it turned out to be a logical career progression for him, of course, since politics is mostly about putting out fuegos, putting out fires. And as a Cuban who immigrated with his parents in 1960 in the wake of the Cuban Revolution, then settling into what became Miami's Little Havana, Representative Jimenez knows a lot about the dangers of fiery rhetoric. In fact, he's part of a group of incoming Republican senators called the Freedom Force.
Representatives. I'm a representative. Remember that.
Okay. We're going to talk about the difference between senators and representatives.
Big difference.
And that's why we're doing this podcast, to educate as well.
All right.
You always reach across the aisle. You put out the fire and you get things done. Bienvenido to Hola, My Name is the podcast. Always good to see you, my friend. Happy to be in your awesome new office here.
Thank you. I appreciate
in the Capitol.
It. Yes.
This is one of the oldest buildings.
This is the oldest building. This is the oldest office building. It's the Cannon building. It's the first one built. So you can see, you know, it's got the real traditional kind of styling, very high ceilings. All of it is being renovated right now.
It's got awesome crown molding.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I'm in love with this building.
It's a cool place. Yeah.
Okay. The difference between a congressman and a representative?
None. Well, a congressman and a senator. Yes.
Right.
A congressman is a representative.
And a member of Congress. I'm sorry.
Okay. A member of Congress is the term is representative. That's, there are 435 members of Congress. It's the lower chamber of it's the House, and you have the House and you have the Senate, and that encompasses Congress. There's 100 senators. There's 435 congressmen and women representing the 50 states and some of the territories. So there are actually some Congress people from here that are like Puerto Rico, even though it's not a state. Okay, they have a representative here. They get to vote on a lot of things, but not at the end. At the end, only congressmen and women that represent the states have a vote on the House floor.
This is new for you.
Yes.
Anything surprised you? You thought it was going to be one way and ended up being totally different?
No, not really. I thought it was going to be more bipartisan because the gap or whatever the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, is very, very small. And so the Democrats have are the majority party. They have a gap of about five seats. And so seeing that, I thought, okay, well, we could probably work together, have to work together because there's only five seat difference, mm-hmm. right? But what surprised me is that the Democrats have been very, very unified, have not broken rank, and have really passed, you know, for me, some radical stuff that I thought would never pass. And so that's the one thing that's surprising to me. But outside of that, you know, not much surprised me about, what goes on here, how it happens. I'm learning because I come from an administrative role as mayor of Miami-Dade County, the strong mayor of Miami-Dade County. I actually ran the administration. I'm not running the administration here. Now I'm one of 435. I'm one of 213 Republican members of Congress. There's committee structures. The way things are done here, you just can't snap your fingers and say, hey, go fix that pothole. Okay. We have to vote on it to fix that pothole.
Right.
Right. And you have to, you know, draw up legislation to fix the pothole. Right. And so
is this job more difficult than your job as mayor, as your job as commissioner when you ran a fire department?
No, it's not as difficult as mayor. As mayor of Miami-Dade County, I represent 3 million people. I only represent 800,000 as a representative. Is it different? Is it a different league? Yeah, I'm in a much different league. We're talking about, you know, the areas that we talk about are countrywide, right? Global, you know. And so, yeah, it's a different league. But as mayor of Miami-Dade County, I was responsible for 28,000 employees, making all the major decisions day to day, you know, that actually affected the lives of people every single day. We here in Congress, the federal government affects your life without a doubt, but it doesn't affect it to the same level as your local government does or your state government does. They're much more closer to you. But we, you know, our effects are nationwide and globally. And so, no, I wouldn't say that it's more difficult. Mayor of Miami-Dade is more difficult than being a congressperson. Being a commissioner of Miami-Dade is not as difficult as being a congressperson. So if I can, if that kind of solves it for you, okay? And I was a commissioner at one time. It's not as difficult. The decision you're making as a commissioner, you know, don't have the same kind of ramifications that you do as a congressperson.
Well, I want to thank you and your staff because we walked in and we were received with awesome Cuban coffee. Con espumita.
Con espumita.
Con espumita.
Bueno, qué bueno. Okay. Están aprendiendo. Okay.
Sí,
bien.
Sí.
Muy bien.
Muy, muy bueno. Así que felicidades a todo tu staff okay. que está por acá. Y me dice que fue un venezolano que hizo el café cubano. Le quedó muy bueno. Has the reaction from fellow congressmen surprised you when it comes to what's happening currently in Cuba? You were born in Cuba. You are from South Florida. You know the struggles of the Cuban people. And after, you know, el 11 de julio, and now we're currently in 15 de noviembre, and we know that Cubans were once again terrorized and weren't allowed to come out and speak yeah. their mind, and más represión que nunca. Does it surprise you that more people aren't tied into what's going on to our neighbors to the south in Cuba and the suffering of the Cuban people?
Well, there are a few bipartisan issues here in this Congress. One of them is Cuba. All right. And so our South Florida delegation, including the Democrats, are solidly with us. Like we are, you know, some of our Democrat colleagues from South Florida are very tied into Israel. We are also very tied into Israel. And so, we support the Israeli cause. They support the Cuban cause, and so we've found a synergy there. Look, we just had a resolution that was put together by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat, that stood in solidarity with the Cubans' right to protest on the island, to do it in a peaceful way. Asked the Cuban government not to be repressive. Also asked for the liberation of and freeing of political prisoners. That got bipartisan support. Unfortunately, 40 Democrats voted against it, but that's 40 out of 220. All right. So the vast majority of Democrats and all Republicans, except maybe one, okay, voted for the resolution. And so that shows that there's pretty good bipartisan support for a free, you know, democratic Cuba. Is pleasant, and I think that's something that's the right thing to do. But you know, if you're asking me, you know, is there any surprises here? It's pretty partisan. You know, it's pretty partisan, and so it's more partisan than I thought it would be. And again, even with only a 5-seat majority, you'd figure that you'd have to work more across the aisle. But I found it very, very partisan in that most Republican amendments to bills are rejected. And then basically the majority rules. The majority rules here, the majority rules. And it's unfortunate. We should have more give and take, but that's not the case right now.
What can we as a country and what should we as a country be doing more for and more to help the Cuban people attain their freedom?
Well, I mean, everybody's asked for, we know we have the technology. Everybody's asked for a way to break through this, you know, internet silence that everyone, so they shut it down or they limit access to certain sites, et cetera. And we have the technology to break through that. So we've asked, you know, on numerous occasions, the Biden administration to utilize that technology so the Cuban people inside the island can communicate with themselves, but more importantly, also communicate with the outside world. And you know, they're not asking for remittances. They're not asking for food. They're not asking for a vaccine. They're asking for liberty. They're asking for freedom. And so, the more images of repression, et cetera, go out, right? You know, I think the myth that somehow this is a romantic revolution, that somehow the people of Cuba are with this revolution has been broken, especially by the young and the artists, you know, and the movement that's going on there. And so more and more foreign countries are saying, oh, wait a minute. There is repression there. You know, the people really want freedom and liberty. And it's not this, you know, Cuban mafia, okay, that's telling this, right? That's good. And that gives me hope, you know. It gives me hope for the future. And once the Cuban people, and this is easier said than done, all right, once the Cuban people then lose their fear of the regime, then the regime will come. They still have it, and the Cuban, you know, regime still, you know, incorporates, you know, brutal tactics in order to instill that fear, to reinstill that fear, so that, you know, they basically keep a lid on this gene.
Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. If the United States has a capability to help the Cuban people through you know, supplying internet, we obviously have the technology to do so. It's part of the president said at one point as well that he agreed with that. Why is that taking so long, in your opinion?
Well, I think because you're surrounded by people that are sympathetic to the Cuban regime, people that have taken groups of people to Cuba, all right, to show them, you know, the good parts of the revolution, et cetera. And so there, it's ideology. And so the president has surrounded himself in the State Department and the security services, et cetera, with people that are somewhat sympathetic to the Cuban regime. And so they do have the technology. They're going to give us lip service. They're going to say the right things. Remember, what I've always said about this president and this administration is never listen to what he says. Only look at what he does, right? And this president may say the right things, but never does the right things. And so he is, you know, historically been on the wrong side of history. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to change. He's going to say the right things. Oh, I'm going to do this. I want to bring back the country together. And yet he's probably split this country even more than we had before, okay? And so he hasn't done anything to unify the country. And in essence, he's actually grown this rift between right and left further and further apart because of the policies that he's wanted to instill, which are, for me, you know, going further and further left, bringing this country further and further to, you know, some kind of a, you know, socialist, you know, society, which I am vehemently against, and I will fight it to my last breath.
13 U.S. presidents have come and gone since Fidel Castro sequestro a Cuba back in 1959, and the regime is still there. How do you envision that if a Republican were in the White House currently, things would be different for Cuba?
I think you'd see more pressure and more pressure on our allies that somehow help the regime, and we need to continue this pressure. Look, calls for military intervention. I don't think we're going to have military intervention. All right, obviously that would solve the whole thing, but we're not. It's not going to.
That's not practical. That's not
practical. It's not going to happen. And anybody says, "Oh, I'm calling for military intervention,"
because of the allies that Cuba has.
Right. That's not going to happen. All right. But political pressure, economic pressure, continuing the economic pressure, allowing the Cuban people to communicate with themselves, using our technology to make sure that, you know, because I believe at the end it has to come from inside the island. All right. Now I see signs of that. You know, forming, especially with the young people. That they're even people that were brought up indoctrinated in the system are rejecting the system. And when you have that, then I think that's the beginning of the end. And show them that we would support them, that we're behind them, you know, and that it for the regime, it doesn't pay to continue, you know, on this path. And so will it happen tomorrow? I don't know. It could happen tomorrow. Tomorrow it could be all spontaneous. Remember what happened to the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe? You know, nobody knew that it was going to happen, right? You know, Reagan said, tear down the wall. The conditions were right. And then the people rose up. And millions of people rose up. And then the security apparatus couldn't deal with millions of people at the same time, calling for change, and all collapsed. So it's going to be something like that, where millions of people just rise up and say enough, okay? And then the security apparatus says, well, I think I better go to this side now because this is the beginning of the end for us. I think when that happens, but it has to be, it has to, it's got to be organic inside. It's
something from within.
From within. It has to be within, with the support of the United States and the rest of the world that, yeah, you know, we don't recognize that government anymore. Mm-hmm. You're an legitimate government, and continuing the pressure, economic pressure and political pressure to help that revolt that needs to happen from inside.
Does it surprise you the more democratic countries or people that claim that they, you know, respect and love and understand democracy, that even the Catholic Church with the Pope is not stronger against the dictatorship and what's happening and the abuses that the Cuban people suffer every single day?
Does it surprise me? No. I mean, they've been supporting this this regime for a very, very, very long time. People are supposedly our friends, right? Have been in there. But what I see, there are signs that some of our friends are saying, wait a minute, hey, this isn't just anti-American, mm-hmm. okay? This regime is anti its own people, right? So that's what I've seen. I saw a speech from the president of the community of Madrid the other day, calling for change, et cetera. That's always, you know, now it's in Spain. Okay, Spain has been one of those that has helped, lift this, prop this regime going for a long time. On the bad side, on the flip side of that, you have Venezuela, you have Nicaragua, then you have, Bolivia and some of those other countries that are maybe turning more to the left. Okay, things may be happening in Brazil later on, things happening in Argentina, that again will end up starting to prop up, the regime. But right now, pressure has to be put on Venezuela and Nicaragua and Cuba. Cuba is the cancer. Cuba is the one that has to go. Mm-hmm. That's the one that's spreading this revolution, all the way around Latin America. And we as Americans should have a doctrine, and there should be a Monroe Doctrine of democracy in the Americas. And that we won't tolerate, dictatorships, no matter if they're right, left, it doesn't matter. We just won't tolerate dictatorships. Okay. This should be the hemisphere of democracy, and America should be the leader in that. And, I hope maybe there should be a Monroe Doctrine 2.0. Okay. That we won't tolerate, dictatorships. It's gotta be democracy. They don't have to necessarily be pro-American democracies. It's just democracies. All right. And then, I think things will have a way of working out, but it's I do see signs of it on some of our allies seeing the truth, finally realizing what the truth is in Cuba, especially since those demonstrations that happened, and then the repression that the world has seen. That's why it's so important to reestablish communications and internet, so that the world can see what's happening in Cuba, and that this rosy picture that the Castro Diaz Canel clan shows the rest of the world, that they're revolutionaries and they're for the people. And look at the literacy that this idiot, Senator Bernie Sanders says, they're more literate. Like we were we were in the Stone Ages back in 1959. Okay. The greatness of this revolution. Yeah. Okay. They can all read, and they can all be, but they're all equal. Yeah. They're all equally miserable. All right. Cause that's all that communism and socialism brings to you.
Let's focus back on the States for a minute. You mentioned a little while ago about the divide that we currently have in the country, and it's all right, scary that things have gotten, to the point where we don't agree to disagree. Now it's just who screams the loudest.
Yeah.
And I think it goes for both parties, right? The radical right and the radical left, my opinion, Trump on the far right and AOC's on the far left. And where are the moderates? Where are the, I grew up and my dad always told me, este país es el mejor país del mundo. And I totally agree with him. And I was born here thanks to the fact that this country opened its arms to my parents and my grandparents. My dad always says, this country has always done well when it's governed down the middle, not too far to the right, not too far to the left. But now the loudest voices are the most radical ones are the ones that have taken over the conversation. And the people in the middle, the moderate voices, are kind of silenced out. Does that worry you?
Yeah, sure. But, I think the country is a center-right country. I don't think it's a center country. I think it's a center-right country. We've splintered off, in my party, we have a far right segment, and the Democrat Party definitely a far left segment. All right. which I can't coming here. I came here with the full intention of being bipartisan, right? But I've seen the other party now has been taken over by this element, okay? And I will fight it tooth and nail. I will not sit by idly by and say, yeah, I can go ahead and give a little bit, get a little bit, because before you know it, I'm there, okay? And I'm not, all right? And so I came here with the full intention of being bipartisan. I'm probably one of the most bipartisan members of Congress when you look at my voting record, but I will not vote for certain things just to get along. You have to fight for your principles. You have to say no. You have to plant a flag and say, this is as far as I go, and this is what I believe in, and you have to fight for the principles that you believe in. They're fighting for the principles they believe in, okay? And I am adamantly against a lot of the things that they want to do because I know where that ends up. You know, this whole woke atmosphere that you got to be politically correct. We can't even laugh at each other anymore or laugh with each other anymore because you're going to be destroyed. You know, it's going way, way too far. And I've seen this before. And I think, you know, your parents saw it, okay, where you can't say something and you can't express your opinion and you better do this and you better do that or else somebody's going to destroy you. We have to fight back against it with all of our hearts because we have to get back to the America that I came here for, which is free speech. If you don't like what somebody said, well, you didn't like what somebody said. What can I tell you? You express your opinion. You express your opinion. You don't try to destroy somebody because they have a different opinion than you. And this is what I'm seeing, man, that people
are trying. It's not the America that I
of course
grew
not.
Up in, the America that I've grown to
right. But love. But now you can't say anything about anything, or you can't express your opinion and then try to shut you up. And I know what that's about.
You know, where does that come from?
Oh, that comes
from
that
whole cancel culture as well.
That cancel culture is
very dangerous. That's a lot of harm.
Oh, I think it's extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. All right. That you can't speak your mind and you're afraid to speak your mind. That's not America. Okay. That's not America, not the America I came to. And that's certainly not the America I want my children or grandchildren to live in. They should be able to speak their mind however they want. And it shouldn't cost them their job or this or that or their career or whatever. Cause somebody said one wrong thing 50 years ago. Okay. Hey, you know, we're all human. All right. And so, you know, and then it's somebody can say one thing as long as it's okay. Cause it's woke, right. But it's just as racist or whatever as ever as somebody from the right. And then you get destroyed. The right person gets destroyed. The left person, no, well, you know, we can live with that. No, 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 no. I will fight for that person's right to say that, right or left. I may not like it, but I'll fight for that person's right to say it. And that's America. That's true America. And then you go to a college when somebody can't speak on campus because a bunch of students go, no, you don't want to hear it. Well, if you don't want to hear it, don't hear it. All right? But you know, don't you're not my police that policing my right to hear whatever I want to hear. And at the end of the day, I have to figure out whether I agree with it or don't agree with it. I'm in favor of it or against it. That's America. All right. And debate is good. Debate on everything is good. And that we determine what we believe in, not you determining what I'm going to listen to, what I can listen to and what I can't listen to. All right. That's the America I grew up in, all right? And that's the America that my children and my grandchildren should grow up in, not having somebody out there censoring what I can hear or not. Now, do I want, you know, is all speech, right? No, look, obviously you can't say fire in the middle of a theater and cause a storm and people die, right?
Okay. We need to be responsible with
you have to be responsible
with our speech and what we say and how
but
we express ourselves.
But who is
as well?
The sure. arbiter of truth here, right? And so, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, the Hunter Biden laptop story came out just before the election. And then you had 64 or whatever intelligence officers say, well, it's probably Russian propaganda, blah, 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 blah. And then Twitter and everybody else starts shutting down the story about this laptop. It turned out to be true. It turned out to be true. You know, so who's the arbiter of this truth meter, all right? At the end, you and I have to be the arbiter of truth meter, okay? I have to determine what I think is right. You have to determine what you think is right. That's what America is, okay? Within bounds, obviously. I'm not saying unfettered.
Well, where are those bounds, though, right? When people, and not just in America, people in the world these days pick and choose what they think is right. A lot of people have chosen to ignore science, chose to ignore facts, create their own facts or what they feel is.
But it's your right.
It's not an opinion.
It's your right to ignore what you want to ignore. Okay. It is.
Yes.
You're right. Okay.
Yes, but it is our responsibility, I think, as well. At least the way I look at it as a broadcaster, right? That if the wall is blue, I can't come out unless I'm colorblind and I don't see it. You know, I see it a different color. But if I know the wall is blue and I'm lying to people and telling them that the wall is red,
that's different.
Very irresponsible.
That's right.
It's wrong.
But if it's teal,
well, it's a shade of blue.
Okay. All right. So, you know, the problem is that, no, you know, you have now the truth people, the truth police, that sometimes isn't telling you the truth. Okay. So, you know, for how many years did we have that somehow the Trump campaign was colluding with Russia? It's turned out to be a bunch of baloney. The whole thing was a hoax. And yet you had reputable news organizations, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of them saying all this Russian collusion stuff. It turned out to be fabricated by the Democrat Party and Hillary Clinton. The whole thing. Where's the retraction? Now that they turned out, hey, that all that was baloney, right? Where is that? Where is it? And yet, no, this is the truth. This is true. It turned out to be all false. So the people are supposed to protect us, right? They've been corrupted. They've been corrupted by ideology, all right? And so we need to get back to a press which is real, a real press, which is a free press, all right, with free thought, and a press that will give you who, what, when, where, how, and not interject all of their opinions into how their stories are written, even though everybody's human and you're going to interject your own opinion how a story is written. But what happened there? So supposedly, the arbiters of truth, the ones that are supposed to give us the facts, et cetera, failed us for 4 years. For 4 years, okay? So now when people say, hey, I may not believe this, all right, it's their own doing.
Right.
It's their own doing, all right? And so you have to be real careful. I mean, for me, I'd rather listen. I read a certain, there's a website that I read that has articles from the left and from the right, okay? And then I determine what I believe.
These are opinion articles.
These are articles. Some of them are opinions. Some of them are written. You know, these are opinion articles from the left and from the right. It's, you know, you get one from the right, you get one from the left, you get one from the right, from the left. And then, you know, nobody's censoring that. I read it. I read the right. I read the left. Then I determine what I think, you know, makes sense to me. All right. And that's the America I grew up in. Right. And so, you know. That's where I stand on this, you know, and that's, unfortunately, we've gotten to this polarizing place.
Yeah.
And we need to somehow come back to the middle, because most Americans are in the middle. I think most Americans are in the middle and a little bit to the right, center right. I think that's where they're at.
You accept the results of our last presidential elections?
Yes, I do.
You don't think there was any type of fraud? You don't think that there was
what I do think has happened is that there was some changes in election law that should not have been allowed, because the state legislators are the ones that are supposed to make those changes. And it's not up to bureaucrats to make those changes. That's why I voted against certifying, you know, Arizona and Pennsylvania, okay? Because there were bureaucrats that made changes to election law, and they're not supposed to, because the Constitution says...
And that happened just prior to the election.
That happened prior to the election, that's right. Okay, and they used COVID as the vehicle. COVID-19 was used as the vehicle to change this election law, and so that's why I voted against certifying Arizona and Pennsylvania. Now, mind you, even voting against Arizona and Pennsylvania would not have changed the outcome of the election, right? Unlike what happened in 2005. When 31 Democrats and a whole bunch, about 100 of them, actually either voted against or abstained from certifying Ohio. Had the results of Ohio been changed, then George Bush would not have been president. So nobody talks about that, okay? So it was okay back in 2005 for a bunch of Democrats to challenge the results of Ohio. And a whole bunch of them did, either by voting no, 31 voted not to, and another 80 or so voted to abstain, all right? But somehow, for us voting on two states that wouldn't have changed the results of the election, oh my God, that's horrible, horrible, horrible. I voted my conscience. Look, there were things there. This is what the Constitution says. You shouldn't have done that, okay? Now, have I ever said that, you know, that Joe Biden's not the president of the United States? Nope. Said no, he's as far as I'm concerned, he's my president, and you know, that's the results of the election. As far as I know right now, yep, that's the results of the elections, and we need to move on. Whatever happens, we need to move on anyway. All right, and
if not, what do we risk? How much damage do we do as Americans to each other or when people don't accept the results of the election?
We do a great deal of damage, but also remember this, okay? Back in 2016, okay, people were trying to delegitimize the election of President Trump by saying that he was in cahoots with the Russians, which turned out to be a big hoax, which was perpetrated by who? Who? You're looking at me with a blank face. You don't have the answer to that one yet?
I'm not sure. There's a lot of people that repeat that. So who is actually responsible for that?
Well, yeah, I think you need to look at the people that have been indicted, okay, of the Durham report or the Durham investigation, who's been indicted and what they have said and who really was involved in that, all right? And so, you know, this that needs to stop. It needs to stop on both sides, all right? Whoever becomes the president needs to be the president. That's it, okay? All right? And so in 2024, I hope we're past this and that we have an election and that the elections are provided under the Constitution, which says that the state legislatures determine the means and methods of elections, and then we move forward from there. And then whatever happens, happens. Whoever's elected president, that's our president, and we move forward as a country, a unified country under, you know, a president that we all say, yeah, that's a legitimate president.
We've talked a lot about the problems.
And by the way, I consider Joe Biden the legitimate president.
Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. We've talked about a lot of things that are wrong with the country, but there's a lot of things that are great about our country and that we are getting right. What are some of those things you think we are doing right now that we should continue?
Well, I think we're becoming a much cleaner country. Again, one of the things that I don't agree with is what's happening with our energy industry and the destruction of our energy industry. I believe in all kinds of energy, all right? And I believe we need to be energy independent. I think it's vitally important for us to be energy independent. And so I don't think you can throw out one sector of our energy producing sector and you're not going to be energy independent. We're going to be depending on somebody else, okay? We need to be energy independent. You know, the way that our technology is moving, you know, at this point, I'm not really happy about, you know, what we're doing with our military. I'm not really happy with how we are confronting, you know, China. I am hopeful that we're starting to bring back our supply chain back to the United States. Some of the things that are happening, I think we are probably leading in how we're dealing with COVID-19. We developed a vaccine. Hopefully more and more of our people are getting vaccinated. And then we can move past this pandemic, all right? And we need to move past this pandemic to open up our economy again. And so, you know, there are things that are going right, but there are a lot of things that I'm not happy with right now. You know, I'm not happy with inflation. I'm not happy with many of the things that this administration is doing on the home front and our external affairs. I'm just not happy. So I wish I could be more upbeat, all right? But we're seeing, you know, levels of inflation we haven't seen, you know, in over 30 years. We're seeing, you know, America's credibility being diminished around the world, the pullout from Afghanistan. We're dealing now with Iran. I don't think we're dealing with them from a position of strength. We need to be, you know, we need to further our allies like Israel, you know, and strengthen our relationships with our allies around the world and show that America has resolve and America, you know, is still the, you know, the greatest and it still is the greatest country in the world, all right? But we can't just sit on our laurels, okay? In order for us, we are the greatest country in the world, but we've got work to do to maintain being the greatest country in the world.
On an even more serious topic, El Picadillo. El picadillo cubano, ¿lleva pasas o no lleva pasas?
Picadillo cubano.
Yeah, do you like your picadillo with or without raisins?
With raisins. With raisins, sorry. I do. And I didn't before. I used to be a purist, right? And then somehow somebody stuck some raisins in. I said, you put raisins
in. I fell in love with that.
And I said, man, yeah, because I kind of like every time you
the
hit
sweet,
a,
sour.
That sweet, yeah, yeah. And I'm a sweet, sour guy because I remember my father... My father, you know, God rest his soul, when he was alive, he taught me how to eat. Now, most people find this, they don't like this, but he would be eating picadillo, arroz, con huevo, right? And then right next to that, He would take a couple of, you know, a couple from Picadillo, blah, 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 and then he'd go over here and go, boop, guayaba casurema, pop, and put it in his mouth. So it was that you know, that
salty
sweet.
Sweet
and the salty. And he taught me that, and I kind of like it. So that's why I kind of like, you know, bacon donuts, you know.
That's like
the
politics.
That's, it is, yeah.
Right? They, it's
yeah.
Salty.
Yeah.
But to be sweet sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to have something sweet with my dinner, lunch, or whatever, and I have no problem eating my dessert at the same time I'm eating my lunch or dinner. Now, I will eat my dinner and then eat my dessert the traditional way, but if you put it in front of me, I may just, you know, every once in a while grab a little piece and, you know, and sweeten it up a little
okay.
bit. Yeah. So, yeah, raisins. I'm okay with raisins.
All right. For the holidays, it's okay. salty and it's sweet at the same time. It's picadillo con pasas with raisins. Mm-hmm. But you got to invite one of two young, you got to invite one of two ladies to dinner with you for picadillo con pasas. AOC or Nancy Pelosi?
You okay? You know what? I'm going to ask my wife, okay? And then she's going to tell
she'll
me.
She'll decide for
oh,
you.
Yeah, she'll decide, because then I want to see that battle, okay?
Who do you think she would pick?
I think she'd pick Pelosi.
Pelosi.
Yeah, and then I want to see that battle. Yeah, I want to see. I'll just stand back and watch, okay? Because it's going to be classic, you know? But she'll take them both on at the same time, okay? Yeah, so, I mean, my wife, hell, I mean, geez, she ought to be here sitting instead of me. I'll ask her, hey, which one do you want to go, you know, go toe-to-toe with? And then I think she'll say Pelosi. But maybe not. Maybe she'd want to go, you know, toe-to-toe with AOC. Because I'm not going to go toe-to-toe. I'm just going to watch them battle it out. Yeah. And I got my money's on my wife.
How much of work do you bring home, these conversations? You bounce them off people?
You know,
or you try to leave?
I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing. Okay.
You have to be.
I have to be. When I go home, I go home. Now, does work follow me? Sure, work follow me. Work follow me when I was mayor and all. But you know, it's interesting that my wife is the one that kind of brings things up. I mean, like, right, you know, I'm when I go home, I want to go home, right? She's the one, hey, what about this? And hey, what about that? Okay, honey. And then we talk about it. And then obviously then friends of mine will call, hey, God, you should have voted this way, or, you know, that kind of thing. It the work obviously follows me, but what's important in my life and our family is God, family, you know, and then everything else, right? So this country is very important to me. God, family, and then country, for me, I do this work for my family.
Because you could have retired after leaving Dade County and gone fishing. Play golf?
Golf, yes. I'll play golf. I don't like fishing.
Are you any good in it? Any good at golf?
I'm a pretty good golfer. Yeah, I'm a pretty good golfer.
I'm a shitty golfer.
Yeah, well, you have to come out. Let's see how you
Help me with my swing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You could have retired, taken some time off, but you decided to continue your service.
Yeah.
That was important for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I wasn't going to retire. I don't feel like retiring. I don't want to retire. I jumped back and become a commissioner, you know. I may have done that. And I was mulling that over, and then I was asked to, you know, would I consider running for Congress? And most people thought, nah, he'll never run for Congress because, you know, he's been a mayor, he doesn't want to be a legislator, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, when they asked me to run, I'm like, yeah, I think I'll consider it. And so I came up here and Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, and I spoke, and I brought Lourdes with me, and we sat down and why it was important for me to run. And so he convinced me it was important for me to run because I don't want this country to go the way the country that I came from. I see things happening here, and it's not being dramatic, that, yeah, I see censorship. Oh, God. The government taking over more and more of our lives. Oh, and that's not not what I want for my children and my grandchildren. And so I'm about public service, and I enjoy public service. It's an honor to be in public service. And so, yeah, I said, okay, I'll go for Congress. And when I got here, you know, only 11,000 people have ever served in Congress in the history of the United States, all right? And so it's a great honor to be here. And so for me, I still get a kick. Every time I come to the office, every time, you know, I look at the Capitol, if you don't get a tingle or something in you, then you shouldn't be here, you know? And so I still do. And I walk into this office and say, man, I'm a congressman. I'm a United States congressman.
Here I am. It's a beautiful feeling.
It is a beautiful feeling. Especially, you know, I came here when I was almost 7. I didn't speak a word of English when I got here. And so it's Cuba to Congress. And so that's why I love this country. You know, how many people can say that? You know, where right. else can you say that, right? You come from a country, you're an immigrant, and you're a refugee, and I've been so blessed in my life. You know, I joined the great fire department. I had a great career as a firefighter. I attained the level, you know, the fire chief was only like 1 in 700 people ended up being the fire chief, right? And then like, well, I'm 37. What am I going to do now? And then, okay, I'll try to be city manager. Okay, and only 1 in 4,000 end up being city manager, and nobody from the fire service had ever been a city manager. And I made city manager. I'm like, wow, I'm city manager. Holy mackerel, you know? And then I retired, and then, wow, hey, I became a commissioner, and hey, I became the mayor of Miami-Dade County, you know? And now I'm in Congress. I've been incredibly blessed, and I love this country. I love this country. I love my community. And I don't want it, you know, I want to see it a certain way. And I want our freedoms to be preserved. And I want, you know, I'm fighting, you know, this wokeness and all that. And you have to be politically correct and all that. No, you know, it's more important to have freedom of speech and freedom of thought than it is to, you know, be politically correct in this, that, or the other. And so that's what I'm fighting, you know, and I will continue to fight for that, and I'll continue to fight for freedom here in the United States and abroad, especially in my home country of Cuba and Latin America. And I also think that we, America, spends too much time looking towards Europe and to the Pacific and not enough time looking south. And we need to take care of our hemisphere, all right? And this should be the hemisphere of freedom, all right? And that's what I'm going to fight for. And so, you know, and until I'm too old to do that, you know, I'll continue to do that until somebody says, hey, you know, let somebody else, you know, take do this. I'll continue to do that. And as long as the people of my district honor me with their vote, I'll continue to do that.
Your awesome immigrant story, and that's why I felt it important to talk to you here in your first couple months
in your
new position. And just to close, when you left Miami-Dade County as mayor, your shoes were filled by the first female mayor in the history of Miami-Dade County, Daniela Levincada. How's she doing?
Oh, she's doing fine. Her instincts are to go much further left. I think she's smart enough to know that you don't govern from the left in Miami-Dade. You govern from the middle. All right, because I'm much more conservative than she is. I'm fiscal conservative, and there are certain things that I did were part of my philosophy, which was fiscal conservatism. People should have the right to keep their money, but at the same time, you know, we made sure that our police department worked, mm-hmm. our fire department, all those things, those services worked. All right.
So, any like real advice you've given her? Have you guys talked since she was sworn in?
No,
there?
No,
you were
no.
Sworn
and
here
we
in
talk
the
every once in a while. She hasn't really called me for my advice.
Anything you're seeing from up here that you think she could do better?
At this point, I think she hired some pretty good people, you know, and she kept a lot of the people that I had, which were really good people. And so, you know, we'll see, you know, it takes a while for you to kind of put your imprint on the county because it's like a big aircraft carrier. And so we'll see. So it takes a while even if you say, I want to go, you know, I want to go toward port. It
takes a while to turn around.
It takes a while for that aircraft carrier to start turning to port. Ports to the left, by the way. Okay, yeah.
Port starboard side.
Starboard side. Yeah, okay. And so
I'm a shitty golfer, but I know a little bit about it.
All right. So
I was a sea cadet when I was a teenager.
She may want to turn the ship to the port a little bit.
Okay.
Her priorities were very similar to mine, but she's got, you know, she's more community, blah, blah, blah. And I was more getting it done right, and then the services, and that I wanted to diversify the economy. And so a lot of the technology you're seeing coming to Miami now, we laid the groundwork for that many years ago. And I'm glad to see that the fruits of that labor, you know, coming forth and diversifying the economy, and that Miami now is the hot and was becoming hot when I was a mayor, right? And so those things are good, and she's continuing that. She's more on the social services side, you know, those kind of things. I didn't ignore them, but she's more focused in on that. She's more a community organizer. I was more of an administrator, right? A political, but administrator. So I wanted to run a really tight ship. You got your money's worth. Everything ran well. I had a certain philosophy. You know, we had demonstrations, et cetera. No, you were going to protect your right to demonstrate, but you're not going to
destroy stuff and burn things down.
You saw it. No, that happened. Okay. Right. All right. And so hopefully she doesn't have that kind of a test. I thought she did okay. She did fine on Surfside, you know, helping the families again, and then allowed those professionals that knew how to run the operation to run the operation. That's, you know, one of the things that you have to, you know, tip your hat is you got to know what you know. You got to know what you don't know. All right. So the things that you know, go ahead and run them. The things that you don't know, let somebody else run them. But pick good people that are strong in what you're weak in, right? And so, you know, I think, you know, she's got good people. So so far so good. You know, I'll give her a passing grade, even though she's on the other political spectrum than I am. So yeah.
You were screaming at the TV.
That was hard for me to say too, by the way. Okay.
So no, it's not. You always spoke in your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
She's done fine.
But we are definitely on different political spectrums. Yeah. But she's done fine. Yeah.
If we added her to the three, to the Picadillo dinner, AOC, Pelosi, or Cava?
Who would my wife want?
No, who would you go to dinner with if your wife okayed it?
Oh, just me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take Levine Cava any day. Yeah, because we're both mayors, so we can talk about joint experiences and all that. I have nothing in common with AOC, and I have very little in common with Nancy Pelosi. I think she's very effective. You know, you have to tip your hat, effective, you know, in guiding us in the wrong direction, but she's effective. That means she gathers all her cats and puts them all together and they all vote, you know, together. So she's an effective Speaker of the House for her party. Not so sure she's that effective for the country. A speaker, I think, should be more inclusive and should be governing more from the middle. She does. She hasn't. She doesn't. That's not her. And so, you know, is she effective? Yep. But we have very, very little in common. And I don't think I may have said hello to her once. Okay. We don't really cross paths. So, dinner, I'll have dinner with Cava. But maybe my wife would probably want to have dinner with Nancy.
I'm envisioning you like Nancy Pelosi walking by and you holding your leg out like tripping her.
No, I don't. No. I'm a gentleman. No, I wouldn't.
You sure are.
I'm a gentleman.
I'm kidding.
I would never ever do that. But I will. I do not like the direction she's taking us.
Thank you for everything you've done for the residents of Miami-Dade County. Thank you for representing us in such a dignified way. And thank you for all the work that you're doing here for the residents of your district and our awesome state of Florida. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
All right.
Thank you.
See you, Enrique. Hola, my name is. Hola, my name is. My name.